This is tape recording number 5501 C12PLS. A public lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 12th of January, 1955. The title of this lecture is Games. It is 60 minutes long. Copyright 1955 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by HCO Tape Section, St. Hill Manor, East Grinstead, Sussex, England.
Our audience tonight has been dis-promoted to the degree that we have been unable to secure a proper place to be held week by week. We can get all sorts of halls, but unfortunately none of these halls can be held with any degree of permanence. Are scheduled up. We can have the library, for instance, come June, every Wednesday night, but you know, I've called people's attention that this is January. And they had an engram on that old song, June and January, I guess. So, but the next thing was the Chamber of Commerce room at the Westward Hall is not even available regularly to the Chamber of Commerce. The Westward Hall is so high class. They're so high class that anybody want to buy some of their stock? We're picking it up. They won't be with us long. The next bid that we had was the Monroe School Auditorium. So once more, we've got to check this over and find out if we can have it regularly. Our ambition around here is to get a hall which we can have Wednesday by Wednesday consistently from here on. There's no sense in simply moving around from one place to another place endlessly. So I thank you for any inconvenience these small quarters are causing us tonight. Tonight I want to give you a little talk, which is a request. Talk on games. And I think that we may or may not know all there is to know about games, but I'm going at a very, very fundamental level on this particular subject, and you're going to wonder what games have to do with human behavior, and let me start the talk by telling you that human behavior is a game. What is a game? A game is an activity engaged upon by one or more individuals in order to maintain his interest in communication in life. Now, one can actually engage upon a game, but only by synthesizing an opponent. So one with a synthetic opponent can have a game. But a real game requires two. And when an individual is synthesizing an opponent, he becomes aberrated, because he does not have a direct communication line. The communication line is not between A and B. The communication line is between A and something I'm pretending is somebody else, but that I know is A. Now, it's actually true that a life form can make another life form without any difficulty, and this is one of the first actions in a game. But in this case, we have a different individual created. So we have one individual creating another individual, just like a father would play with his son. We have a Thetan capable of making another Thetan with whom to play. So we have two legitimate opponents. But only if full determinism or comparable determinism has been given to the other individual. So thus we get one of the first requisites in games, that there must be some parity between the players. Some parity. Data of comparable magnitude, this is expressed in logic, and we have to have some parity between the players. It would be no fun at all for the New York Giants to play the Bush League high school team. Nobody would come to see this game at all. Unless, of course, it was for charity and a big laugh. But that would really not be a game. Everybody would know he was the game was not being engaged upon. One might say this about the Dodgers in an off season in the Bush League high school team. But we were talking about big time stuff. By the way, if there are any Dodger fans present, I would be very, very happy to talk about it further. But I've been trying to get Brooklyn to mock up a ball team. And all Brooklyn really does, though, is keep mocking up the Dodgers. Anyhow, it's just a case of a pre-clear being real recalcitrant. Well, when we look at the whole problem of games, we are looking at two opposing identities. And the problem of games can become very complex by simply adding further players of similar parity or magnitude. We have two players. Now we could have a very stylized game. We have a standard game where 50% of us are on one side and 50% of us on the other side, and we are busy playing this game. Now, well, let's get a little more complicated game. Let's put a third side. And this side is playing this side, and it's also playing the other side, and each one of these sides is playing the other two sides. Now, you say such a game is impossible. You would say also it would be impossible to have a war with three opposing sides. Three opposing sides. This would be a very, very complicated war, wouldn't it? Well, we had such a war right here in Arizona at one time. And it was successfully fought for a long time without any conclusion whatsoever. The Mexican army was fighting the U.S., and the U.S. was fighting the Mexican army, and the Mexican army was fighting the Apaches, and the Apaches were fighting the Mexican army and the U.S. army, and the U.S. army was fighting the Apaches. And this was all taking place along about the time of the Gadsden, just before the Gadsden Purchase. It was a very interesting war. Very interesting. Now, what if we added a fourth side? Well, we'd have a family. Now, what if we added just at once, at one fell swoop, 150,000 sides? We'd have a town. And 150 million, we'd have the United States. And it looks, life does, a little bit complicated, because we need an umpire. And everybody still thinks we have an umpire, but I invite you to get involved in a suit and try to win it or lose it or do something about it after you become involved in it. What happens is, as the experience of many of you can bear out, is you go to court, but nobody has ever invented a cliche. Go to court, you see, just a trite phrase. Nobody ever invented a phrase which got somebody out. They talk about settle it out of court, but that means they've never gone to court, you see. It means if they were in court, they got disgusted with it. And although they're still in court, they settle it out of court. But nobody has a phrase which says, we remove the suit from court. See, nobody has that phrase. Because there's not much of an umpire there. The umpire which favors one side more than another side is then not a just umpire, is it? I invite you sometime to go down to night court and watch it's a horrible example to take a city like this or to use a dirty word here in this lecture, but in Los Angeles. let's go down to night court, Los Angeles, and let's look around and discover if there is any justice going on. No, there is not much justice, but there are an awful lot of fellows who don't have $10 in their pockets who are walking down in front of the judge, and the judge says, guilty or not guilty, that's $30 or 30 days. Guilty or not guilty, $30 or 30 days. Once in a while, the bailiff kicks him, you know. Judge, hey. He said not guilty. Are we dead? 90 days. Why? Because these men are in rags, that's why. Because they're hungry. They're the misfits of a society. That isn't justice. Now we go to another court that is run in daytime. And Miss Mink comes in. And she's guilty of having slain her husband and firing 16 shots, which he had to reload, into his body. And the jury goes out, and the judge smiles, and they say, huh? Accidental death. And Miss Mink puts her skirt below her knees and walks out of court. Oh, yes, this happened. What's the difference? What's the difference? She was good to look at. One difference. Money, that's another difference. You can stay out of court to the degree that you can buy lawyers. You can attack anybody to the degree that you can buy lawyers. This is a fact, but it's been a fact for a long time. So where's the umpire? Well, we better look around to the Treasury Department if we want the umpire for this game. So we can't find a live umpire. We merely find a court. Laughingly call the Court of Justice. If any lawyers are present or ever hear this, you understand that I'm not talking in fun. We look around and try to find an umpire. And we elect something that we can all trust as an umpire. Or we have agreed to trust as an umpire. A dollar bill. That's an umpire. Because it says in whose possession it is the winner. And so we can play this little game. If he's the winner, he's the loser, he's the winner, he's the loser. But something else enters in. We have things like diamonds and Cadillacs and Fords. And neckties and things like this. When the dollar bill goes that way, then the mess, quite often, except in the Bureau of Internal Revenue, goes the other way. See? I mean, the dollar can be changed into an object. And let me give you now the next requisite to a game. Now, the first requisite was we had to have, for a real game, we had to have two opposing players. We could get a synthetic game, and only a synthetic game, when we had one individual synthesizing a player. You see, and then pretending he was playing a game without any real live opponent. But a real game would require two live persons, beings, thetans, whatever you want to call it, and something for which to play. There has to be something there for which to play. There's a disgracefully vulgar term used in Hollywood to describe the thing that everybody is after in a movie. It's called the weenie. Everybody is after this gimmick. Weenie, gold mine, the ranch, the girl, the this, the that. Anything that represented the item of play. In football, the gimmick would be a football. And, of course, honor and glory. But honor and glory are always hanging around games, ready to cave in somebody. Anytime the next time somebody hangs a medal on you, by the way, about honor and glory, about games, it's very amusing. I had 21 medals and palms, and I tried to hawk them at the end of the war. And the fellow said, well, that'll be $5. And I said, well, fine, take them for $5. No, no, he said. He thought I was buying something. Now, they weren't worth that. So anyhow, they're not marketable. And so forth, and there's nobody interested in looking at them, particularly at the end of a war. You don't come around and say, look. Look, the fella says, so what? Can you serve gas in the pump? He's in a different game. So most people, by the way, are involved in playing the game that is long over. And that's what we call aberration. Aberration is playing a game that finished some time ago, according to other people's agreements. If anybody really insists on fighting the War of 1812 again, today, everybody thinks he is crazy. We have a girl right now who is busy fighting the French Revolution, and everybody agrees she's crazy. But all she's doing is fighting the French Revolution. She thinks spies. She thinks anybody who walks up to her or something like that, she'll become very disgusted if she finds out that he's not one of her spies. You see? So the thing that a real game requires is something else, present time. All right, so now we have the two players, the gimmick that everybody is after, the weenie, and present time. Well, what's present time require? Well, it requires only this. We've got an agreed upon point on the time track in which to pass the gimmick back and forth. and to look after and run after this gimmick. We've got an agreed upon area. Now, somebody who's playing a game way back in the past, or even somebody who's playing a game way up in the future, takes the gimmick and gives it a good pass, you see, and no players. So he hasn't got a game, has he? Of course, he could have somebody with him way up in the future, but then he'd be starting another universe. All right, this present time affair is merely the agreed-upon moment in which we all are. And we've agreed that there is a moment in which we can play this game, and that game is this moment called present time. So we get the other requisites of a game, which are space, energy, and a playing field. You've got something to stand on. It's very nice when you're playing a game, but we can play a game with simply space. Two thetans can just take some space and play a game. All right, if this is the case, if all we need is some space, then why a playing field? That's what the nuclear physicist is asking today. Who wants a playing field anyway? We know there's no such thing as a game. Anyway, they kind of think about life that way. Now, we have 150 million people, each one of whom considers himself, when we get an only one society, 150 million people, each one of whom considers himself a full team. That's really a society of cats, isn't it? When you come to think it over. We have 150 million teams on the field. And the Democratic Party is very surprised very often to find one of its players suddenly wearing some sort of a label, a red star or something like this, and says, "Huh? We thought he was playing on this team." And he's all of a sudden sold his votes and he's warred out or something of the sort, you know, to the Republicans or the Socialists or somebody. And they say, they begin to realize after a while a very horrible thing, that this man is not playing on a team. He thinks he is a team. And that is the definition of disillusionment. You think somebody is on your team, and then you find out that he is a team. You could find out that he's gone over to somebody else's team, but it becomes obvious if he moved over to somebody else's team that he actually didn't belong to your team in the first place. You see? So disillusionment merely consists of whose team? That's right. The person is disillusioned. He's betrayed. The whole idea of betrayal comes out of this. The fellow's got your... Well, how would you like to be walking down the street? Here, give you a very graphic example. You're walking down the street with this fellow, and he's got a felt hat on. And he's talking to you about all the good things that we are going to do for Chicago. And we should throw out another bond issue for Chicago. And we should do this and that for Chicago. And this for Chicago and that for Chicago. And then what do you know? He happens to accidentally take off his hat, and we find out he's wearing antenna. He's got antenna growing out of his head. We take a little closer look to him. His ears are circular. We look at his mouth. He hasn't got any teeth at all. He's got metal grinder plates. We take another look at him. We find he's only got three fingers on each hand, and we're talking to a Martian. Betrayed. Betrayed, not your team. Now, if we have a society of cats, there isn't much game possible. Because just try and play a game that has five opposing sides. Play some checkers sometimes with five opposing sides. It becomes a little bit confusing, doesn't it? Well, instead of playing checkers with five opposing sides, let's play it with 150 million opposing sides. And immediately becomes non-contemplatable. I mean, it's just too gross a figure of confusion. Mostly because the 150 million are not lined up. Now we get a war. Somebody invented this thing called war. And they took it down from a game that everybody could play to a game that some generals sit around and botch up. That is the best definition I know of a war. Is an area on the time track which has been botched up by generals. We no longer have to consider admirals. They sit over in the Pentagon and salute every time a general passes by. I saw a naval officer the other day, and he's wearing First Lieutenant Army bars on his raincoat. I saw a seaman the other day, and he was wearing a first-class private stripes on his navy blue jacket. And I said, "Aren't you boys being absorbed a little bit by the Army?" And they said, "No, we think it's fine. We think it's fine. We think it's fine. We think it's fine." You know, they get trained.
Anyhow, the Army and the Navy used to be able to fight. But they got that gummed up, and nobody could find out what's happened to the Marine Corps these days. They tried to unmock the Marine Corps, the public screamed, so they haven't mentioned since what they have done to them. But it's probably something. But anyhow, I can't imagine the Marine Corps moving over to the Pentagon. I just can't imagine this. There was a Marine landed and took a landing area out in the Pacific, I remember one time, vaguely, and he was relieved by three Army divisions, and they had to retreat. Well, this could actually be a Marine viewpoint of it. Actually, the Army is well trained enough not to have any viewpoint of it. Well, so this war is something in which somebody gets a big idea whereby everybody's got to hate some other nation. They dream up a lot of reasons, and then they get the other nation to dream up a lot of reasons, and they cook up all these reasons so that nobody can find out anything, you see. And so that there's a whole opacity to the entire scenery, and they get everybody raving mad about this. I was very amused one time in a war museum, and I was looking around, and there was a great big poster there. Do you remember World War, if you've read the history books, you girls? The World War One posters of the German soldier with his bayonet through the stomach of a Belgian baby. You remember that one, huh? Well, there was a German war poster, which had survived the debacle, and it showed an American soldier bayoneting a German child. I didn't recall this happening, but it probably did. Who knows? Anyway, duplicate lies. The only real point of agreement two opposing sides have in a war is that they both lie like hell. So we get everybody united, and we say, you are an American, or you are an Englishman, or you are a Frenchman, and therefore, we've all decided now about this, you are them, and therefore, immediately, supposed to hate the enemy. Now, the definition of an American, of an Englishman, of anybody else, at the moment war is declared, becomes that one who hates Germans, Russians, Poles, whatever it happens to be, you see, Italian, doesn't matter. But that is the definition. An American is not somebody who lives in America. It is somebody who hates and is willing to fight this other country. See? So we get very confused. We have allies. You see, we have Russian allies, and they're all Americans because they hate Germans. Oh, you think this is peculiar. We were being shown pictures all during World War II, or was it World War VI, or 86? It was some war back on the track. I forget. And we were shown motion pictures demonstrating that Russians were just like Americans. There was no distinguishable difference of any kind. These pictures were being shown to the armed forces. And we had one picture there demonstrating conclusively and completely that Russia had never been successfully invaded and had never lost a war since 1256 A.D. There was only one difficulty with this last picture. I had as a bosun a former professor of history. And he and the captain and I sat there and pulled the picture apart as it was being run through the reels, you know, because its geographical areas and its dates of conquest were all messed up, just to prove the point. Actually, Russia has never won a war. They just change the government when they get tired. If they have ever won one, it was a different prince that accepted the victory. Well, that's a fact. It's a very confused picture, because you're looking there at what the U.S. believes today is a team. We believe this Russian scene is a team, you see. It's not a team, not even vaguely a team, but I forget how many different languages. I've been told this every once in a while, how many different languages there are, but it's always a different figure, and I can only assume that it's a large number, and that Russia is relatively unexplored. People keep finding new languages. In other words, it's a bunch of republics of one kind or another, which were melded together, but which never amalgamated. It's a tremendous number of independent states which are called the United States of Soviet Russia. Oh, that's not quite right, is it? It's the Union of Socialist Soviet Republics, isn't it? The United States of Russia, then, and the United States of America have a feeling that someday there will be a war between them. They look forward to this with great anticipation. The only hole in the thing is there is no United States of Russia. There's a section on a map. And there's 2% of the population who wish they could stir up something in order to keep their own people in line because the Russian people are not a team. So you want to know where wars come from. The only thing really wrong with the war is nobody asked your opinion or mine whether or not we should then now start hating Japanese, or whether we should now start hating Eskimo, or whether we should now start hating Brazilians. See, nobody asked our opinion. We're suddenly told that we have to do so, and then they say, well, you're now fighting. Now, what is that? That is playing a game not of your consent. Of course, I went out and fought this last war, but I knew it was going to happen in 1936 and couldn't get anybody to see the light of preventing it. I was in the happy and stupid frame of mind thinking that somebody wanted to. Nobody wanted to prevent that war. They were trying to push it along as fast as they could. And with this next one, they're trying to push it along as fast as they can possibly grease the wheels. Well, it's not a good game. It's a bum game. That's the only thing we find wrong with war. It's a real bum game. For instance, there were parts of the war that were a good game. Actual fighting is not too bad a game. Don't let anybody get you messed up about this. They say, hurry up and wait, you know? That's the bum part of the game. Hurry up and wait. You go out and you draw your shoes and they're too big for you, and your rifle, and that's too small. You go running around like mad under the behest of some buddy who is doing this because it's good for you and will get you in a state of discipline, but who confuses you all the time one way or the other. When you're beaten down into such apathy that you will sit in mud, they call you a soldier and send you away. You're all set. So broken peace. Now, instead of somebody playing a game, then, he is on a chessboard or a checkerboard, and he's being pushed around on the checkerboard. And after a while, he gets somebody's paint shipped off, and they throw him over on the side of the table, and you have Homo sapiens. This is, then, upstairs for Homo sapiens to become a piece on the checkerboard for somebody to push around. And upstairs, that there's somebody playing this checker game. And we have lots of spires which climb into the skies all over the United States to demonstrate the belief in the fact that somebody is playing a checker game. That's not blasphemy. I don't know what blasphemy is. Anyway, the next... Well, he's probably a good checker player. I don't know. I haven't hit the king roll for a long time. Lousy checker player. Anyway, we find then that there are various categories that a being can be in one of these games. There's the category where he has played the game and is not now playing the game. You see, that would be a player standing alongside of the checker player, sort of observing, you know, like the alumni does at the rah-rah football game. You know, they once played the game, and they pick up that wonderful moment of nostalgia when they, too, sat by the water bucket when Red Grange rushed down with a 77-yard dash. You know, they were on the team. And they sit there as a spectator. Now, there's the spectator of the game. Now, there's the fellow who is on the board being pushed around, the fellow who carried the message to Garcia, the fellow who ran three-quarters of the way across Russia and fell dead, or... What's his name? I don't know. Anyway, he was a messenger. Popenkov or...